Upon reflection, we realize that taken together in tandem, these two stones tell the story of ancient and modern Jewish Jerusalem. The stone of Hezekiah testifies to a feat of human skill, but the temple stone reminds us that human skill alone does not explain the story of the Jewish people, and that Jews must always look up to the Temple Mount to see the source of our salvation. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 46, The Temple Boundary and the Death of Judah. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Which artifact from the collections of museums outside Israel best bespeaks the Jewish connection to the land of Israel and to Jerusalem? As I've previously mentioned, many offer as the premier example in this category the Hezekiah Stone, the plaque created by the brilliant Judean engineers who fashioned the tunnel during the war with Assyria, a plaque that, as I have also discussed, sits today in a museum in Istanbul. Speaking some years ago to archaeologists, Benjamin Netanyahu reflected on why he so deeply desired the return of the Hezekiah Stone, asking whether there was more conclusive proof, quote, to the ancient connection between the Jewish people and Jerusalem, to the city of David and the Temple Mount. Of course there isn't, he said. The stone is indeed amazing, and it is indeed a testament to the Jewish connection to Eretz Yisrael, and it does indeed belong in Israel. And yet the Hezekiah Stone speaks only of Judean achievement. It makes no mention of the Temple Mount, or the temple, or the God who dwelled in that temple. But there is another stone in the very same museum in Istanbul that does speak of the Jewish connection to the Temple Mount, the Jewish connection to the temple, the Jewish safeguarding of the temple, and the Jewish preservation of its relationship with the God that dwells in the temple. And unlike the Hezekiah Stone, which was found underground in Jerusalem, this stone unequivocally comes from atop the Temple Mount itself. It was discovered in 1871 amidst the ruins created by the Romans who had thrown stones down from the Temple Mount. We have sent you a link to an image of this stone. What you are looking at is a remnant of the Soreg, a fence or boundary marker that surrounded the holiest parts of the temple. This stone was a part of it, bearing a warning that is not in Hebrew but Greek, because the warning is for Gentiles, telling them not to enter beyond this point. Rightly understood, this sign from the Soreg does not only restrict, it also embraces. For on the one hand, non-Jews are welcomed in the temple and on the Temple Mount, and indeed are subject to much less ritual restrictions regarding entering much of the Temple Mount than are Jews. From the very beginning, God's house is meant to be a house of prayer for all nations, but the innermost parts of the Mount reflect God's covenantal relationship with the people of Israel. This stone from the boundary marker, from the Soreg, was discovered in the 1870s amidst the temple ruins, and its history goes back to earlier enemies of Jewish Jerusalem than the Romans. Indeed, the Soreg, it seems, is bound up with a moment during the Maccabean Wars, one in which Judah was defeated in battle, but was nevertheless remembered forever. Following the defeat and death of General Nicanor, Judah held Jerusalem, but with the Seleucid successor of Antiochus, Demetrius I, still battling for control of Judea, Judah sought alliance with a rising power, Rome. 1 Maccabees tells us, quote, so Judah chose Epilemus the son of Yochanan, son of Akos, and Jason the son of Eleazar, and sent them to Rome to establish friendship and alliance, and to free themselves from the yoke, for they saw that the kingdom of the Greeks was completely enslaving Israel. They went to Rome a very long journey, and they entered the Senate chamber and spoke as follows. Judah, who is also called Maccabeus, and his brothers and the people of the Jews have sent to you to establish alliance and peace with you, that we may be enrolled as your allies and friends. The proposal pleased them, and this is a copy of the letter which they wrote in reply on bronze tablets, and sent to Jerusalem to remain with them there as a memorial of peace and alliance. May all go well with the Romans and with the nation of the Jews at sea and on land forever, and may sword and enemy be far from them. If war comes first to Rome or to any of their allies in all their dominion, the nation of the Jews shall act as their allies wholeheartedly as the occasion may indicate to them. And to the enemy who makes war, they shall not give or supply grain, arms, money, or ships as Rome has decided. And they shall keep their obligations without receiving any return. In the same way, if war comes first to the nation of the Jews, the Romans shall willingly act as their allies as the occasion may indicate to them. And to the enemy allies shall be given no grain, arms, money, or ships as Rome has decided. And they shall keep these obligations and do so without deceit. Thus, on these terms, the Romans make a treaty with the Jewish people. end quote. Was this alliance the right move for Judah? From the perspective of realpolitik, it may seem smart, but traditional Jewish commentators and histories often note in this context that an alliance between Jerusalem and Rome was in danger of ending with the empire assuming that it had rights to Jerusalem. Be that as it may, the Book of Maccabees, in seemingly segueless fashion, continues from its account of this alliance to Judah's final battle, which took place against the Seleucid general Bacchides, we are told. Now Judah was encamped in Elasa, and with him were 3,000 picked men. When they saw the huge number of the enemy forces, they were greatly frightened, and many slipped away from the camp until more than 800 of them were left. When Judah saw that his army had slipped away and the battle was imminent, he was crushed in spirit, for he had no time to assemble them. He became faint, but he said to those who were left, "Let us rise and go up against our enemies. We may be able to fight them." But they tried to dissuade him, saying, "We are not able. Let us rather save our own lives now, and let us come back with our brethren and fight them. We are too few." But Judah said, "Far be it from us to do such a thing as to flee from them. If our time has come, let us die bravely for our brethren and leave no cause to question our honor." The Book of Maccabees adds that, quote, "The earth was shaken by the noise of the armies, and the battle raged from morning till evening, concluding, the battle became desperate and many on both sides were wounded and fell. Judah also fell and the rest fled. Then Jonathan and Simon took Judah, their brother, and buried him in the tomb of their fathers at Modiin and wept for him. And all Israel made great lamentation for him. They mourned many days and said, how is the mighty fallen, the savior of Israel?" End quote. Thus did Judah fall, and thus did Jerusalem at this point fall back into the hands of the Hellenists, with the temple overseen by a Hellenist priest named Alcimus. And this in turn brings us to the Jewish wall with Greek letters, whose remnant sits in Istanbul. The Book of Maccabees continues. In the 153rd year, in the second month, Alcimus gave orders to tear down the wall of the inner court of the sanctuary. He tore down the work of the prophets. End quote. This wall, it would seem, is the Soreg. What we have here is an attempt by a Jewish Hellenist to disassemble the boundary that marked the special connection between the temple and the Jews, and to turn the Temple Mount into another Greek-style site. But this Hellenist high priest was, according to the Book of Maccabees, miraculously stopped mid-process. Quote, "But he had only begun to tear it down, for at that time Alcimus was stricken and his work was hindered. His mouth was stopped and he was paralyzed, so that he could no longer say a word or give commands concerning his house. And Alcimus died at that time in great agony. When Bacchides saw that Alcimus was dead, he returned to the king, and the land of Judah had rest for 2 years." End quote. It is these 2 years that will set the stage for the Hasmonean rejuvenation. But according to the Mishnah, this moment, the Hellenist priest's attempt to remove the Soreg, the boundary, was remembered forever. For, as some note, this story in Maccabees seems to be referenced by the rabbis, who tell us that the Greek rulers had made 13 breaches in the Soreg, and that thereafter, anyone passing the place where the repairs were made in that very boundary marker would bow in gratitude to God. Gratitude for Jewish oversight of the temple. And also, perhaps, gratitude in remembrance of a miracle that prevented a Hellenist priest from assaulting the Jewishness of the temple. Thus was the failure of the Hellenists to remove the Soreg forever remembered. It is ironic, then, that those that would ultimately succeed in removing the Soreg, in hurling it off the Temple Mount itself, would be the soldiers of the empire with which Judah had sought alliance, Rome. But at the same time, it is a wonderful fact and a tribute to Judah the Maccabee that another part of the Soreg sits today in a Jewish reunited Jerusalem. For the Israel Museum also has one of these stones for the Soreg, though the artifact that they have is broken and incomplete. Only Istanbul has a complete one. It is true, of course, that the Hezekiah inscription stone from the tunnel beneath the city is so much older, but this temple stone is from a section of even more exquisite holiness and is a reminder of the very temple mount that King Hezekiah ascended in the face of Assyria's imminent attack, praying to God and thereby bringing the salvation of Jerusalem. The Hezekiah inscription stone is a reminder of Jewish strategic thinking. The temple Soreg stone reminds us of Jerusalem's sanctuary. Which of these treasures in the Istanbul Museum should be a greater treasure to the state of Israel today? Both are precious. And upon reflection, we realize that taken together in tandem, these two stones tell the story of ancient and modern Jewish Jerusalem. The stone of Hezekiah testifies to a feat of human skill, but the temple stone reminds us that human skill alone does not explain the story of the Jewish people. and the Jews must always look up to the Temple Mount to see the source of our salvation. The Hezekiah stone and the Temple Sorek stone. The challenge is to join the two, strategic thinking and humble faith. And if anyone, since David, combined these virtues, it was Judah the Maccabee. Judah remains one of the striking heroes of the Second Temple era, and his story, not only during the Hanukkah moment, but from beginning to end, leaves a legacy that looms large to this day. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.